Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. My name is Susan Dobie Chase, and today I am thrilled to bring you the writer Stephen Meads. How are you, Stephen?
Hi. I'm okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's all you got right now. How about if you just start out by reading us one of your pieces?
All right, I'm going to start. I wanted to give a really brief content warning to start it off. I know I was given a note that language isn't an issue on the platform that we're on, but I also recognize that this first piece that I'm about to read, and it's not like you'll see. Anyway, this is a content warning just for a general sort of visceralness of language and descriptive imagery. This is my first poem, I guess. I'm going to read it. Booger Positivity is the title, and there's an alternate title, which is 94 to Dimension Excrement. And this is for the original saint of body positivity, Booger Man. The muscular maestro whose mighty mucus mollified miscreants. The fastidious fighter whose flatulence froze fearsome foes. The steadfast superhero with snot that stops sadistic plots. The OG of original grossness to the core. The human body made weapon from the weaponized components of the human body. Ever let loose a room-clearing fart? Ever had those allergies just break the plug on your snot faucet? Ever pressed your nails to the side of a blackhead only to have pus the size and shape of a maggot burst forth like rot god worship incarnate? Thus it is to wield the powers of Booger Man. So often we put the lid on grossness, the puerile humor of childhood sent to the compost heap out of which adultness is supposed to blossom. But how do our bodies often receive that memo? Like, how many reassuring voices told me acne was just a phase that my skin would learn to outgrow? Like, I wouldn't just ugly duckling myself into ugly swanhood. Like, my bowels didn't unspool years later, and the shame of that doesn't haunt me. All the more, the weight of so much secret unpleasantness that I am somehow not supposed to disclose. I sneeze often. Perhaps not with the deadly accuracy of Booger Man, but then again, Snotty Ragsdale had to be cast into Dimension Excrement before his belches blossomed into batty-beating burps, and I suffer, too, from gastroesophageal reflux disorder. This burbling cauldron of my belly reflexively burp hiccuping over my own speech as much as anyone else's need for decorum, so where would I be without Booger Man? Do you remember those poo-pourri advertisements that had to remind you that they were selling a real product? How every Clear Cell ad features someone with a breakout history as scar-free as their bright, overlit foundation can make it, is all just another way to remind users that the human body is a flawed beast meant to be deadened and stuffed into a cleaner package. Like, who cares where the meat comes from if the sausage looks good? But here, I burn my own effigy in the fire of Booger Man, roast myself until I split at the seams, all the human of me, tender, disgusting overspill of clogged pores and sweat stains, all the times my loins funked their way into shit-stained Rorschachs, and how my own blood boils to the surface of my skin and leaves me the task of leeching my own purity away from those that would mark me freak for it. I still dream the hero of me, damn it. Even icky and disgusting and flawed and human, I am the snot lodged within my own nasal cavities, still breathing deep in spite of it, and the air smells sweat, or doesn't, and damn if that isn't its own sweetness. to be this gross and alive all at once, to be alive in this body, the only one I have, the one that will fight the good fight, the grossest way out. That's the poem.
And really, you know, there's nothing that people can relate to more than, like, trying to hide their bodily functions. I think that that's wonderful. It speaks to everyone, absolutely everyone. So where did this come from?
So a lot of it is slim, I guess. I spent a lot of time kind of, like, thinking about my own struggles with body acceptance and image positivity in the current climate that we live in. There's a lot of discussion about stuff like that and sort of physical space acceptance for me. And I was thinking of a way to, like, write to that. And I've always been, like, interested in weird video game characters and weird offshoots, and one of my favorite video game characters was the character of Booger Man, which was, like, this game that happened in a period where I think video games got really gross for a minute. There was, like, Booger Man, there was a series with Toe Jam and Earl where, like, one of the characters was named Toe Jam just for whatever reason, you know. And there was, like, there are a couple other, like, Earthworm Jim, where you played as a sentient worm that wore a spacesuit and had a gun. So there was just, like, a weird period of video games, and Booger Man was one of my favorite kind of, like, ideas. The character that's, like, this, his weapons are, like, he flings snot at his enemies, or he, like, farts or burps and defeats people with these, like, these body functions. And I was, like, I've had periods of my life, especially in, like, the spring. I live in Portland, Oregon, and the seasonal allergies get really crazy here because we have one of the highest levels of, like, pollen releases during, like, April and May. And I remember going to a theme park with my partner. We were at this, like, little dinky theme park just south of Salem, Oregon, called the Enchanted Forest. And that was the day that my allergies decided, hey, it's a good time to, like, let loose in fury. And we're at this, like, park. We're supposed to be having a good time. The entire time, my face is just, like, running, burning. I'm sneezing constantly. We had to keep stealing napkins from vendors. It was, like, it looked awful. And I felt like, man, I probably look like the most hideous, horrible thing in this park. Like, I look just miserable. My face is, like, raw from constantly blowing my nose. And so I was like, well, this is an experience I've lived through. And one of the jobs and tools of art is to kind of, like, reclaim your space and or justify your existence. So I was like, this is the way I'm going to try and speak to that. Like, this is the thing that upsets me about myself. But if I can't find a way to breathe acceptance into it somehow, I'm never gonna move on. So I started writing about it, and I started writing, you know, thinking about and drawing in other sources. So the references, the outside references, like the trying to find things that everybody might have experienced. I feel like anybody that's used the internet in the last, like, 10 years encountered poopery as a thing, because it was like a it was like a running banner on, like, Hulu for a couple of years, and I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, this is a joke, like, somebody is, you know, this fancy British lady in a bathroom telling us that, you know, there's a way to make sure that our shit doesn't stink. It's a joke. And then at some point the commercial itself addressed that with the lady saying, yes, this is a real product. And I was like, oh my goodness. And so years later, I've seen bathrooms with poopery in them and been like, oh, it was a real thing. So, you know, it's all of that kind of sourced into a tapestry. But
full disclosure, I got some for a white elephant gift last year for Christmas. So it is a real product.
Yeah. Oh. Does it work? Is the second question. I've never.
Can we just?
I'm still of the matches, the matches school.
Yeah.
I found this. I don't know. I found a product of incense matches that I will buy them
incense
periodically.
Matches.
And
now there's another brilliant idea.
Right, you just light a match that has a little bit of incense on it, and then you just let that burn away. So
I have not seen that. That is an amazing product as well.
Yeah, and yeah, the palm stands in light of or because of my own various periods and extensions of that. So yeah,
I was looking for white elephant gifts. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No,
I was going to say, I've been looking for white elephant gifts for this year. Like, white elephant is that game that you play where, like, everybody picks a present. Okay, so I found these things that kind of relate to the poem that are, like, these pads that you wear in your underwear. This is a real product, and when you fart, it makes your fart smell like mint.
I've imagined products like this, so that's incredible. I've often thought of, like, what is the functional product that you would, like, what sort of panty liner would you use to, like, if you release gas somewhere and you're worried about it, but then the smell transmutes somehow. So it's amazing to think that that's a real thing out there.
It is. It's fairly expensive right now, but I'm hoping that it catches up.
Right.
And I wonder if the mint smell is stronger any time that you just have the most rank ones, if the mint just
I feel like the design team would have to, like, incorporate things that kind of, like, transmute it. So, like, there's, like, you know, certain ways to, like, make slightly less palatable smells more palatable, like, nobody particularly likes the smell of, like, you know, weird kind of funky fish offal, but then you put it in with, like, a really savory, like, you know, sauce, like, mix, and it almost like a chia pino soup or something, which has definitely, like, a weird fish odor, but also has this, like, delicious smell. It's like, how would you transmute, like, the sort of the gaseous release of the human body into something that was, like, slightly less disturbing?
I wonder if
it could
make
a million
dollars if I'm... Go ahead.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
I keep jumping on you. But
yeah,
I wonder if I could make
fine.
A lot of money if you could make bad-smelling stuff, like, you know, liver and onions when it's cooking smells so disgusting. I wonder if we could make some sort of product that would make disgusting-smelling food more palatable because you can't smell the smell of it. That would be interesting.
That's where having really bad allergies can be a like, slight blessing in disguise. Because, like, there are periods of time, specifically in, like, the spring and early summer, where I, like, straight up can't smell half the things that I can normally smell. Like, my sense of smell just decreases by a factor of, like, you know, two-thirds or something.
Like the smell of lilacs and whatnot in the spring,
yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. All sorts of, like, nice smells go away, but, like, any of the pungent ones kind of leave, too. And then I know if something smells really good, it has to be really strong because I'm smelling at a lower factor than the typical time period. Yeah, the fall's not as bad for me. I don't know if it's very much a seasonal thing, where it's one season is really rough and then the fall's fine. And in the winter here, at least, it gets real cold. So then my smell seems to, like, go the other way and it's, like, heightened. I don't know if it's because, like, you know, I almost get, like, the dog sort of wet nose thing happening when I go outside and it's just cold enough to, like, steam my mustache region and just enhance every smell I get or something. So yeah, I don't know. It's a turnaround. Senses
well,
are weird.
Yeah. Well, you know how some people, when they're deprived of a sense, it become their other senses become stronger. Do you notice that?
Maybe. I mean, I do have like a sense of that as an idea, but like it's so conceptual because it's one of those weird, like, senses are very interesting to me because like there's a lot of shared sense in society, mm-hmm. but it's also like such a personal thing. I don't know if you've read like there's like the sort of theories on color vision and how there are probably people who have extra, I think it, is it cones, rods or cones? It's the one, mm-hmm. the one for color, mm-hmm. and they have an extra spectrum where they can differentiate even like more micro details between colors, but people will never really know. If what
right.
they're, you know, just like we'll never have a full sense of who sees color the most, or like super tasting where like some people have
yeah.
a palate that detects certain foods like after results. So it's like the people who for whom cilantro tastes like soap because there's like
yeah,
an extra
I've heard
oil
that.
In cilantro that when combined with your saliva reacts weird in some people, and it's just an allergy to cilantro that causes this soapy taste, but it creates this deeply unpalatable taste. And there's a whole group of people in society who have super sensory taste buds that can detect higher levels of alkaline and bitters in their food, so for them eating can be like less pleasant despite the nomer, like the mnemonic of super tasting being attached to it. It
right.
really is. It's almost like a weakness in some way because you're so sensitive to food that it becomes challenging to eat. I don't know.
Yeah. Huh. I've always, you know, yeah, because of the super taster thing, I always imagined it being like a really wonderful thing to have, but that's an interesting perspective. I think there's a poem in there somewhere.
I've written a poem on it. I don't know if it's certainly not really about super tasting, but I've definitely used that that image as a setup before.
Well, that's awesome.
It's one of
awesome.
You know, it's one of those things. I want to write about those things that I read, but then it's challenging to figure out how to like disclose it. So like every once in a while I have the vehicle for it. That's like the benefit of the Boogerman poem, is having a vehicle that like allows an in to talk about the real thing. Because my struggle is always like find a touchstone that seems at least potentially large enough to then do the writing that I want to do. And I have like very specific things.
Oh, I wanted to mention to you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, go.
I just wanted to mention to you that there's a series of books you should look into if you haven't heard of them. Captain Underpants is a sidekick named the Amazing Booger Boy. I just thought if you hadn't read those by Dave Pilkey, you should really do it.
I've never read a Captain Underpants book, but I've seen the media and stuff. I always liked the idea, so I definitely will check that out.
But they'll make you laugh.
Yeah. And I think that like kids books in particular too have like a really good, they're really sharp as far as relating like a lot of that weird stuff, because, you know, as a kid you're exploring, you haven't learned anything, like you don't have as many boundaries of cultural shame or impropriety.
Exactly.
Whether
yes.
or not to feel bad about something, and you're encouraged to explore your creativity to a more extensive degree, so you can get, you know, you can like be gross and awkward and weird, and nobody's gonna really punish you for it, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
there's also,
so then
if
kids,
I could just
kids
put
books
this in
get
there
to
for anybody
that.
Who's a parent. There's two other books that I want to recommend for kids that I think that are awesome and make me giggle, but make kids ask incredibly pertinent questions. They're called The Gas We Pass, It's a really good one. And then there's another book called Everybody Poops. And that's
I love Everybody Poops. Everybody Poops is one of my favorites. I have a sort of a running, ongoing joke with my my partner about how I want to. She's very into Broadway musicals, and I've joked with her a lot about trying to create a Broadway adaptation of Everybody Poops because I feel like it would be incredible.
I mean, how pertinent.
Right? Given that
it's
SpongeBob
the next
has
Hamilton,
a Broadway show.
I'm sure it's the next Hamilton.
But, yeah, somewhere in the world.
Wonderful.
There could be an Everybody Poops
the
musical.
Direction
I think
expected this to go, but it's wonderful.
Okay.
I keep interrupting you. I'm like, gosh, we talked.
No.
Okay, I'm going to be quiet.
No, that's fine. It's natural flow of conversation, as you know, starts and stops. So I don't mind, and I'm decent at keeping track of things that feel like pertinent to say versus just random thoughts that fire across my head. But yeah, I think that Everybody Poops is a book is amazing. There are a couple. I went to the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry and. Portland had like an installation for a while that was like Growthology, and it was based on that book
series.
which is like a children's book series like exploring the grossness of the human body, but it was like justifying and kind of like telling you where and why and how your body produces the certain things that it does, and I thought that was really really great. And I don't know. I feel like it's really important. Like, I have a lot of, like, weird, random conditions that I've accrued through life that, you know, in certain lights can be really upsetting. But, like, because they're, like, affect daily interactions. But then, like, to have, like, science kind of, like, say, well, this is not, like, a singular weird thing. This is, like, something that can happen to everybody is really useful. You know, justifying your space, going back to that idea. One of the poems that I have not written that I'd like to write at some point is about a condition that I have, which is called leemia, which sounds really weird, but is just an overactive fluidity of tear ducts, wherein external sensors cause you to cry. Because the human eye, like crying is a bizarre thing that we don't have like a lot of understanding of and why people cry physical tears when it's not necessarily there's no like self-preservation mechanisms behind it. But one thing that'll happen to me is I'll be having discussions with people occasionally and separate from any sort of emotional response, but my eyes will just be tearing. Over tearing and crying. And it used to happen a lot. And it happens mostly like certain like wind conditions or air conditions. Mm. And it's apparently it's just a physical reactive to certain environmental stimuli, but it's similar to the idea of crocodile tears. And I've wanted to write about how like sometimes I'll have like a physical emotional reaction that is not an emotional reaction at all. But it's like understood as that, and the sort of compounds between the two. I still haven't figured that one out, but at some point.
Sounds like a great idea, though. And speaking of great poetry, would you be willing? It's halfway through the show, or a little bit more. I was hoping that you could share another poem with us.
Sure, I queued up another one, so I will try it. And this will take the conversation in a more, I don't know, we'll see, serious or who knows. I'm going to try and shift gears. So this poem doesn't necessarily have a title. It's fairly new. I'll do my best. All right. Rightfully so, a friend calls me on my use of the word lame as a pejorative. and reminds me that it's not mine to use, that I should not take its usage in such a negative fashion, and that in doing so I perpetuate a social standard that sets able bodies against differently able bodies and then denigrates one. And I am always trying to do the right thing, but I grew up in the 90s in Northern California with language that of the time probably wasn't the most responsible in instruction. And it makes me think of the euphemism treadmill. It's this idea of how society builds a word for a need, and then how ignorance and disdain deface the same word until socially we have to stop its usage altogether. And isn't that hella crazy? Like, my friend, well within their rights, calls me on the use of the word crazy. Well, technically they call me on the use of the word insane. Say the same rules apply, that social stigmas around mental health are just as rigid as those around ableness, and that it is contribution to making a word unsafe for its proper usage. And that makes me think of the first time that I was 5150'd and how I'd walked into the hospital from the house where I just slammed the door into my head 5 times, and how in the recovery of that walk, I no longer wanted to die, but was now worried about concussions, maybe. And if that wasn't its own form of craziness, well, then the hospital staff took it upon themselves to stop me from leaving. And I didn't even know I'd lost my right to leave until 3 hours later, as I asked to be moved away from this very dangerous-seeming boy shouting death threats at me while secured to a gurney across the hall, and how I could no longer define my own safety or stability, and now I was trapped in a room waiting to find out how crazy I actually was. I have been a danger to myself. 2 times where hospitals I walked into voluntarily would not let me leave, but nobody looks at me like I should be able to define said terms. I want to use a word like crazy in all its facets, want to say something strikes me as insane, and offer it the praise and incomprehension it deserves. The fear that my own mind has been prisoner in my body, and my body has been held against me or made unsafe by myself or other people, how I have let so much be taken away, and if I cannot hold on to this, then what other identity could I have? Crazy is my word. Insane is the praise that I felt when my autonomy was given back to me, when I left the hospital on compromised terms and the dawn was breaking and the sky looked like a reflected insanity of my own fractured layers of psyche, and how I walked back home still under my own tower. I am happy to learn words that I should not take. Welcome to being taught of the ones that leave us less a word for their use. But I still feel like I have to be able to define some of my own words too, even if it is all the distorted melt between wonder and pain and awe. I have been on that mountain and not fallen while I was falling. And if that isn't crazy, if I cannot use my own sense of a word that I've lived through to define some of what I have lived, then what else can I say on that?
I want to make you aware of something. We have about 5 minutes or less in the show. So we can either do your third poem near the very end and just talk really briefly now, or we can talk for another, 4 or 5 minutes without reading that third poem. Oh, my goodness. I have less time than I thought. I want to thank you. We only have about 90 seconds. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It was so much fun to laugh with you and to think about our bodies and how, we can be more accepting. And I especially found interesting the whole idea of children and how they aren't as mortified by their own bodies and their own body functions as we have. So I want to thank you for that. That was really a wonderful thing that I want to honor. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it was wonderful.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm sorry we ran out of time.
That's totally fine. That's fine. Okay. And thank you for letting me share those poems and for being
Absolutely.
On the show today.
Excellent. I really, really appreciated it. This is Susan Dobie Chase. It's Spoken Heard. My guest today was Stephen Meads, and next week we'll be back with another famous and wonderful poet. So be listening at that time, and until then, be kind to one another.